Welcome into the FWFB football podcast. We're going to do the quarterback preview tonight. We're still going to have our best ball flavor. It's that time of year. Everybody's hitting best ball pretty hard right now. So we're getting you prepared for that. With me, as usual, Ray Kuhn. How we doing, Ray?
I'm good, Mike. What about you?
I'm good. And then also joining us, Greg Smith from 2QBs.com.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good. And you can get Greg at Greg Sauce on Twitter. Greg's a great Twitter follow. Lots of information as well as some variety mixed in there. Some humor.
Yeah, this time of year, it's not quite as much football talk, and that's going to really start to ramp up over the next couple weeks. We're diving into the draft guide that we put together over at 2QBs.com right now. And so when I find little stat nuggets, I'll throw those up on Twitter. But up until this point, like through the offseason, it's been mostly like bad food and media takes, you know, TV shows, movies, all that nonsense.
Yeah, between you and Sal and everybody at 2QBs, that you guys are one of the more entertaining a Twitter follows going.
Hey, thanks, man. We try.
Yeah, you need that on Twitter. If your timeline is all dry stats, it becomes kind of tedious. But all right, so we'll jump in here with just some general kind of strategy, and you know, either you guys feel free to jump in at any point. I'll get us pointed in the right direction. So we're talking quarterbacks, and you know, we've said it on the show before, the mantra wait on quarterback is well worn for a reason. Whether it's a season long or a best ball, you're going to do yourself a disservice by going early on quarterback. The reason being, the QB5 is very close to the QB15 in any given week versus the RB5 and the RB30. So, yeah, you want to get your running backs and your wide receivers drafted early, tight end if it's the right situation, quarterback, wait on quarterback. And then, you know, when it comes to a best ball, I usually like to start thinking about it in round 10. I don't know about you guys. Do either of you guys have a particular round you want to kind of start to get that on your radar, or is it just, do you take it as it comes?
I mean, I think for me, it's probably around like 6 or 7. I'm starting to think about it, and more like 7, 8, 9. I'm thinking more about taking one. I want to try to get 3 and 3 backs receivers before I'm really kind of considering it, just based on the strategy there. Yeah, I'm probably not going to end up with one of the top tight ends. So I'm thinking maybe 3 and 3. And the fact that it seems like a lot of other people based on the ADP data have the same idea as far as waiting on a quarterback. And to me, I was looking at the rankings, looking at the tiers, they kind of all blend together for me, especially from a best ball standpoint this year. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah. No, totally. I'm with you on that 100%. It's after you're past the top maybe 5 to 6 or 7 quarterbacks, there's just this huge crop of guys who are all really close in value. And that's not to say that like the QB7 won't like drastically outscore the QB20, but week to week, there'll be weeks where that QB20 is just as good, if not better, than the QB7. And that's what you're trying to leverage in these drafts. Like, you're looking for spiked weeks across the board. And because you're going to be drafting 2 or 3 quarterbacks in any best ball league, like, you can afford to have guys that have off weeks because you only have one scoring quarterback every week. In terms of like where I'm drafting them, I am kind of in the same boat as Ray. I'm waiting until like round 7 or round 8 to start thinking about it. Like in my most recent draft, I think the first QB I took was Cam Newton, and I got him in the 7th or 8th round. Let me pull that up real quick. Yeah, I got him in the 8th round, and that seems like a pretty good spot for Cam. I mean, what do you guys think? Does it have to do with the type of player that's available? Because for me, it kind of does.
Yeah, I think Cam's a great example of that because, you know, he has so many weeks where he can run for 2 touchdowns and throw for 2 touchdowns kind of. Mm-hmm. So he's an ideal best ball quarterback. And I would never probably take him that early in a season long draft, but in a best ball format, he's definitely an earlier consideration.
But I mean, the thing I like with Cam is the fact that he does run gives me a little bit of a floor. I mean, maybe there's obviously going to be weeks where he struggles to pass for 200 yards and he doesn't get a rushing touchdown, but the fact that you can get 40 to 50 rushing yards a week from him, like I feel I like starting off with like those 4 or 5 points from him. So to me, that kind of sets him apart from maybe some of the other guys that are going around the same place, like a Kirk Cousins or a Garoppolo or a Wentz, if we're confident in the knee. That Newton kind of starts off with that 2 to 3 point, that 4 to 5 point buffer. Obviously, the ceiling isn't as high from a passing standpoint, but
If I can get those guys, you know, like I said, the first five at a little bit of a value, I'm pulling the trigger on them. But I find myself so far this year in a lot of best balls getting my first quarterback around that, like Matthew Stafford, Marcus Mariota, Pat Mahomes kind of tier, which I'm comfortable with.
That's the group that I tend to start at as well, like somewhere in the Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford range. I don't usually end up with somebody as highly ranked as Cam Newton. In this particular draft that I'm talking about, the reason I wanted to pounce was exactly what you were saying, Mike, is that I was looking at a value when I saw him on the board at that point, because there were multiple quarterbacks who I have ranked below Newton that had already been drafted. Like in this particular draft, Wentz and Garoppolo and Deshaun Watson were all picked before Newton. And I know a lot of people really like Watson, and the upside's definitely there, but I'm not quite there on him the same way that a lot of other drafters are. I have Newton ranked ahead of him, and because, you know, it was three different guys who I had Newton ranked ahead of already drafted, I felt like it was time to pounce. And so I think that sort of value hunting is a good way to go about it. When you feel like you're getting somebody who should have been drafted already, I think that's when it starts to feel right to get at the position of quarterback.
Mm-hmm. And I'm interested in your take, Greg, on that second quarterback. Because I tend to wait. I don't like spending much capital on a second quarterback when there's guys that are just available later who are going to be fairly close. What's your kind of strategy when you're going after your second or third quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on. Like, that's exactly why you shouldn't really pay up for the position. My general strategy with it is if I like where my team is at already, like at running back and wide receiver and tight end, then I'm more willing to pay up for that luxury of a good second quarterback. But if I feel like I need to catch up at those other positions, I'm going to wait as long as possible. When I draft my second QB also has a lot to do with when I take my first one. Like in this instance, if I pay up, quote unquote, for Cam, like the eighth round is still relatively early for me to take my first QB. If I'm taking him there, then I want to wait as long as possible before, jumping back into the position, because like you said, there are plenty of usable guys who are available late. Now, if I wait until like the 13th round to get my first guy, I might come right back in the 14th and take another one, because at that point you're plucking from, pretty equal talents or equal, commodities in terms of fantasy value. The other thing I like to do is kind of mix up the type of quarterbacks I go after. So if I end up with a Cam Newton who has that rushing floor, I might be more willing to gamble on someone who I think is like riskier, but with high upside, someone like Mahomes or maybe Mitch Trubisky, if that makes sense, or even like an Andrew Luck, who like previous to now, like now that he's throwing footballs again, it's a different story. But for a while there, it was kind of uncertain where he landed in the spectrum of like, is he going to play? Is he not? So like, he's a guy I'd be more likely to take a chance on if I have like a safe floor guy as my QB1. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah. I like that you pointed out if you waited a little bit to double tap two QBs, because people are grabbing their backups very early. At least that's what I'm finding in the drafts I've done so far. And, if you sit on it, you're going to end up with somebody a little bit below where you want it for QB1 and a good bit below where you want it for QB2. So if you've addressed the other positions, go ahead and get quarterbacks settled.
How often are you guys taking third quarterbacks in your best balls?
You know, I was going to ask you the same thing, because I tend to want to only take two quarterbacks, especially if I have one solid quarterback, somebody who's like a top 10 guy. I think you're going to get an edge by having an extra receiver or whatever. Ray, I know you kind of like three quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, but I mean, again, the more I think about it, obviously it's a safer choice. But at the same time, if you look at, like, I was looking back to one of the best ball drafts that I did. I took Josh Rosen as my third quarterback in the last round. And then if you go back into the draft room, you have somebody like a Kalen Ballage who didn't get drafted. Yeah. So, you know, so maybe there's one week that Rosen plays for me. Maybe there's not. Or what about the upside of a Ballage hitting? So
it's a, you know,
in hindsight, that might make more sense.
Yeah, it comes down to our, you know, are you risk averse or not? And right now, apparently I'm, I don't mind the risk at all. Where do you fall on the spectrum there, Greg?
I used to be kind of firmly in the three quarterback camp, mostly because I mean, quarterbacks score more than anybody, right? And if you have three of them on your roster, you're kind of guaranteeing yourself more weeks where you're ending up in like the top five, top seven at the position in weekly scoring, just because you have, you know, more shots each week. I've slid back the other way now. I think because the quarterback position is so stable and predictable, like basically every quarterback is going to get you at least, you know, 12 to 15 points in any given week. And especially if you have two of them, like chances are one of those guys is going to hit that, you know, kind of basement threshold. That because it's so predictable, because the scoring is so flat, you really want to be lumping those extra picks at the other positions, in my opinion, and specifically wide receiver for me. I've come to really appreciate a scattershot approach at the receiver position, mostly because running backs are so injury prone relative to the other positions. And because like I'm generally focusing my early picks on the running back position. So I'm going to, in my drafts, because of that, feel a little bit more set at running back pretty much every time. And with that in mind, if I'm always a little bit behind at wide receiver, I want to make up for that lack of like high end talent with just pure volume, with more, you know, bullets in the gun for every week to, you know, try to hit on a, you know, a 50 yard touchdown or 100 yard, that 100 yard bonus and stuff like that. I mean, that's more of a daily fantasy sort of approach, but it's really filtered into my best ball approach too.
Yeah. It definitely comes down to, you know, are you comfortable with it? And I mean, it's scary. It's scary having two quarterbacks and not being able to make a roster move. So
I think it also depends, not sorry to cut you off. I think it depends on which two quarterbacks you roster. Right. If I have Luck, for example, as one of my two quarterbacks, I'm thinking that I'm probably going to get a third quarterback just in case he really can't throw and there really is an issue, or maybe Wentz and maybe his knee's worse, or somebody like Trubisky, who I like as a sleeper, but maybe he doesn't hang on to the job.
Right.
So I think another.
Go ahead, Greg.
I was going to say another thing you can consider with this is like the type of best ball format you're playing in. Like if you're playing in just like a double up league where you just need to finish in the top half, I'm much more comfortable taking three quarterbacks in that sort of setup. Just because, again, you want to maximize your kind of weekly floor, and having three different guys does that. And I think that can also filter into the tight end position as well. Like you want to kind of take those onesie positions and make sure that you're not ever having a bad week there. And just hoping that the rest of your team kind of gets by on upside. I think that that's another key area where I'd be more likely to take a third quarterback.
Yeah, great point. All right, so let's transition here and jump into the tiers and go through. You know, we're not going to have time to talk about every single quarterback who's got a shot to play this year, but we'll talk about the interesting ones. For me, the top tier is two guys. I draw the line with Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. You know, Rodgers is obviously the number one quarterback for good reason. He's had some injury issues in the past, but he's pretty much everyone's consensus number one. And Russell Wilson has kind of done it out of necessity. He's been a little more inconsistent. You know, there's some question marks there. New offensive coordinator, offensive line is always a bit of a problem for the Seahawks. They're typically a bottom OL in the league. Any thoughts, Greg, on what's going on in Seattle this year?
Yeah, I'm a little worried. Like you, I used to have Wilson in my top tier with Rodgers. I think that extra rushing upside he brings is enough to make him that good on like a talent level. But there are so many question marks there. Most of their offseason moves seem to be geared toward running the ball in Seattle. And with that in mind, I've softened my stance on Wilson a little bit. I'm not ending up with him anywhere because I don't draft quarterbacks that early anyway.
Yeah.
But I did slide him into my second tier. He's still the top of my second tier. I think that their defense is not going to be as good either this year. So even if the offensive line is a problem, they're probably not going to be able to run the ball a ton, like even if they want to,
right,
just because they're going to be playing catch up a little bit. But in terms of like exposure to the Seattle offense, I'd much rather just go after Wilson's receivers and specifically Doug Baldwin. I'm all over Baldwin and like wherever I can get him. I think Tyler Lockett's an interesting play. I think Nick Vinette, their tight end, is like a very, very deep sleeper mm-hmm. for that position. But yeah, in general, I think Wilson probably deserves to be bumped down out of that top tier just based upon all the kind of question marks around him on that team.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that you pointed out is their defense. You know, it didn't get better. It was a bit of a problem at times last year. That's going to continue, in my opinion, and it's going to require the ball to be thrown.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Mike, on having Wilson up in there. I mean, reality, for me, it comes down to whether I think he's my second quarterback, but it's really just, I guess, a tiering issue as far as whether I leave Rodgers by himself. And the more I think about it, first, I was looking at it earlier when you sent your rankings around. I'm like, okay, I agree with that. But then, given a little more thought, I probably move Wilson down as the first quarterback in second tier and leave Rodgers by himself, just because I think he has a different kind of upside. Again, Wilson does have the floor with the rushing, and if they're behind, they pass more.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, I'm probably not going to end up with either in many leagues. I actually did draft Wilson in the seventh round of a best ball, but yeah, it was at the point where I was like, all right, I can't let him go anymore. He's my second quarterback, but you know, as far as the tiering thing, it's not as we get into the probably later into the second tier, third, fourth tier. I think that's at a point where I'm watching the tier saying, all right, I got to have one of these guys from each bucket or one of these guys before it drops off again. Right. But Rodgers Wilson, it's all about value for me.
Yep. All right. So I'm going to go to tier two here, and I've kind of grouped just a big mass of quarterbacks together. They're either guys with some history of strong performance, but either age or performance questions or some injury risks. So I'm just going to list them in my order, and then we can throw it out to the group. I got Deshaun Watson, Tom Brady, Carson Wentz, Cam Newton, Kirk Cousins, and Drew Brees. So, Ray, why don't you pick one of those guys and tell me who you think has upside out of this group.
Out of this group, I'm going to say Cousins has upside. And the reason I say that is last year, we really couldn't make heads or tails out of much of Washington's offense. Jordan Reed wasn't necessarily healthy. They never got the running game going. The receivers were inconsistent. This year, he's going to Minnesota. Case Keenum actually put up pretty good numbers last year in that offense, and I think Cousins is much better quarterback than Keenum is. And now he gets Thielen, he gets Diggs, he gets a healthy Dalvin Cook. So I think the upside there, he gets to play in the dome for half his game, so he's out of the NFC East, he's out of that weather. I think Cousins has the best chance to finish at the top of this tier.
We talked about it last week, too. John DeFilippo is a quarterback's best friend in this league. He knows how to groom a quarterback, how to get him in the right mindset and set him up for success. And, you know, his performance last year was like the typical Cousins year. Like, everybody was down on him, but he was still having a fairly solid year. And then, you know, different spots he popped. The one that comes to my mind is the game against the Saints. He had a huge game, and you know, I used him in a good bit of DFS lineups, and that was particularly memorable for me.
My issue with Cousins is that you talked about how he's going into a good situation there in Minnesota with that coaching staff, with those receivers. Like, I get that, but I think he was in a pretty good situation before, despite all the injuries that they had. Like, just from like a offensive game plan and coaching perspective in Washington, that's a good offense. I think that Cousins is a little overrated. Now, he wouldn't be in this tier for me. My tier two is a little bit smaller. It's just Wilson, Brady, Newton, and Brees. Mm-hmm. I generally, if I'm looking at quarterbacks this high, I really want those guys to be completely proven. And I guess I'm kind of contradicting myself because at this point, Cousins continues to prove himself year after year. But I do have some concerns about him, like relative to a guy like Breeze, because we've seen Breeze do it so many times before. We know that Breeze has a great offensive system around him as well with Sean Payton. They've added a bunch of weapons in the receiving game, and they lost Mark Ingram for four games to start the year to a suspension. Like, if I had to pick one guy out of this group to like outplay where you ranked him, I think Breeze would be my pick because, I mean, this guy was a perennial top five guy and usually a top three guy over the past like 6 years. And with that in mind, like Breeze at eight feels like a screaming bargain to me. And he's one of the elite quarterbacks who I am ending up with occasionally, just because he tends to slide down like this based upon, you know, recency bias from last year's bad year, fear of, you know, the age cliff approaching. I think that the comparison is interesting though, because Cousins is also relatively proven now. Maybe I'm overthinking this, but I think that Breeze is probably a little underrated here in your rankings, Mike.
Yeah, and you know, if you've played fantasy for more than a year or two, you know not to count Drew Breeze out. My question to you, Greg, on Breeze, do you think the defense is going to continue to perform strongly for the Saints and, you know, thereby allowing them to run the ball the way they did last year? You know, obviously they're not going to have Ingram for four games, but I don't know. A lot of people don't realize that Alvin Kamara is actually an excellent runner between the tackles, and he's got that shifty back kind of MO, but he's really a solid guy. He's just really hard to tackle. So, you know, people think of him as like a scat back. He's not at all. He's a solid guy. So they're going to run the ball if they're able to continue that. Do you think that's going to be an issue at all with Breeze getting opportunities?
I mean, I don't think their defense is going to be as good as we remember it being last year. But even last year, it was kind of a Jekyll and Hyde defense. Like week one, they came out and got torched by Sam Bradford. Yep. And then for the next like 6 to 8 weeks, the defense really ratcheted up. But then towards the end of the year, they really fell off a cliff again and kind of became one of those defenses you wanted to play your guys against again. And I think that the truth is probably going to be somewhere in the middle this year, right? A lot of the really good defensive players they had last year were young, like rookie players, like Marshawn Lattimore is in his second year now. So I think some of those guys are going to step up to some extent. But again, I don't know if they're going to be like that elite level defense that they were for that, you know, early part of the season last year after week one.
Right. Their biggest question mark for me is their defensive line. Yeah. You know, they traded up in the draft to try and improve, but, you know, Davenport, we'll see. I don't know if he was worth what they paid. They don't really have much of a pass rush. They can struggle against the running game at times. So, you know, that remains to be seen. So if they get into some shootouts again, I don't think anyone would be surprised.
I mean, just natural regression says that they're going to score more passing touchdowns too. Like they had an inordinate number of rushing scores last year, and that should shift back to a more normal level for them at a baseline.
Yeah. All right, so two other guys in this tier that, you know, we can't gloss over. Tom Brady, age 41, going to be back out there again. We started to see some of the cracks at the end of the season, and, you know, a lot of people jumped on that and started comparing it to the end with Peyton Manning. You know, the interceptions went up. He was still a great quarterback, still guided his team to the Super Bowl. So it's not like he's chopped liver, but do either of you guys have concerns with spending up on Tom Brady this year?
Yeah.
Nope.
I mean, I think I think it's only natural to have some concerns about him. I mean, He's gonna have value. He's still gonna be a top 10 quarterback, top 12 quarterback, but it's that week to week thing. I think it's gonna be a little bit maybe of a game plan thing that they drafted Sony Michael now, so maybe they do focus a little more on the running game. He's missing out Edelman for the first four games. I think where you have him ranked is probably a few spots too high for me. I would maybe move him down to like 7 or 8. In that tier, and I'm probably not going to end up drafting him just because I think that maybe one of these years he's just not going to put up the fantasy numbers that we're used to.
You're on the same page there, Greg?
No, absolutely not. I have no worries about Tom Brady. I mean, he put up 500 yards and 3 scores against the Eagles defense in the Super Bowl. I think he's just fine. he didn't have Julian Edelman in that game either. I don't know. I have no concerns about him. He's my QB3 behind Rodgers and Wilson. I'm one of those guys who really buys into track record QBs, especially these elite guys.
When you say 41 though, man, I'm 35 and like I get out of bed some mornings and it, you know, I couldn't throw a football.
Yeah. I mean, we're also not professional athletes either. Like he trains year round to be able to do this. Like, I just don't have those.
I'm definitely not on the TB12 method.
You're not having avocado ice cream.
That sounds kind of good. I mean, I try it, but I don't know. can I ask you guys about Wentz? Because where are you at on him? If only because, like, I look at his touchdown rate from last year, and I think that's got to regress back down to some extent. Are you guys confident that he's going to be a top five QB, like you have him ranked here? Because I'm not sold on that at all.
For me, I'm bumping him down to my third tier. Sorry, Mike, I'll let you go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, obviously I'm an Eagles fan. I'll try to stay impartial. Absolutely agree. You know, the touchdown rate was insane. What he was doing last year. I think for me, what puts him up here with these guys is the offense in general. Mm-hmm. You know, they've lost some. I wouldn't say talent. The offensive minds, and we talked about DeFilippo leaving. They lost Frank Reich to the Colts. But it's Doug Peterson's offense. They've still got plenty of weapons. The defense, I don't think it's as good as some people are drafting it, actually. But it's still an aggressive defense. It's going to put the offense in good positions. So I don't think he's going to have the same year. I don't think you can, coming off the injury he did. But I think he still is above anybody in that next tier.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I have him in tier three, like Ray does, but I also have Watson down there too, for the same, you know, regression based reasons. Like the small sample size we saw from Watson was, you know, just unsustainable. He's not going to do that again this year. He still has the opportunity and the chance to be very good, but I don't think you can draft him ahead of someone like Cam Newton, who's, you know, proven to be usable in fantasy basically every year. We should probably move on to the next tier for you, though, because we said we were only going to talk about a couple guys, and we've basically talked about everybody.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, we'll go ahead. The next tier I've got Jimmy Garoppolo, Matthew Stafford, Patrick Mahomes, Marcus Mariota, Ben Roethlisberger. Anybody out of that tier, Greg, that you want to highlight?
Yeah. So I'm really into Marcus Mariota this year. He's a candidate for positive regression. Like, no doubt about it. He had a 2.9% touchdown rate last season. Year two of Corey Davis, like a new offensive coordinator, moving away specifically from a terrible offensive system. Like, I think the sky is the limit for him. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he outscored Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson this year. Like, I've kind of thrown that bold take out a couple times this season. I don't necessarily want to rank him that high because you don't have to, but he's a guy that I'm definitely targeting from this group of guys.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Matt LaFleur, their offensive coordinator, has worked with both Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, two of the brightest football minds in the NFL. He's surrounded by weapons. Every position, they've got a plus player and multiple plus players. So, yeah, strong offensive line. It's a great situation and a great price. I'm finding myself ending up with Mariota quite a bit in best balls.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more on the Mariota. I was on him last year. He obviously didn't live up to it, but I think I'm going back to him this year, and I'm hoping that the people that were on him last year kind of fell off because he struggled a little bit, and then we'll see the positive regression. And this also the year with Corey Davis. If Davis takes a big step, that'll obviously benefit Mariota, and it's kind of be a package deal with those two.
So another guy I want to get your takes on, Pat Mahomes. I seem to be a little high on him. I'm getting him in a lot of drafts. I know there's no track record. I guess I'm a little bit of a believer in the Andy Reid system, despite what he did to the Eagles at the end there. but you know, he's consistent. You know, he's good at identifying talent. What do you guys think about Mahomes?
All right. For me, the first thing kind of comes to mind. You have Mahomes 11, you have Watson 3. I know we're not going to beat up Watson in the second tier anymore, but both of those, it looks like it's like almost like a bold prediction, like best case scenario, end of the year, Watson's going to be the third best, Mahomes going to be the 11th best quarterback. So on that note, going back to Mahomes, I mean, he really had one game, and we know he has a cannon for an arm. We know about the system. We know about the talent around him. I have a hard time stomaching Mahomes as my starting quarterback. In best ball, it's a little bit easier because you're going to double tap it and come back with like a Roethlisberger or a Goff or a Matt Ryan or somebody like that. But season long, where maybe even only drafting one quarterback, I'm not going into it relying on Mahomes as my starter. Just based on the lack of track record, we really don't know what he can do under center for a full season. But if you are so high on Mahomes, then maybe we can go back to a debate we had a few weeks ago of Tyreek Hill and Julio Jones. Where I was on the hillside.
Ray says Tyreek Hill is up there for him.
Like on the same level as Julio Jones?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, talent-wise, I can't really disagree. But I'm not really into Mahomes the same way that you are, Mike. I think that you have him ranked here kind of close to where his, maybe not his absolute ceiling is, but that's a high range outcomes, I think, for him. If only because he is a second-year player, because he only has one NFL start, I'm not convinced that they're really going to take the reins off, you know, so to speak, like right away in year one of him starting. I think that Kareem Hunt is still going to stay really busy running the ball. I think they're going to try to win with defense, like get back to a little bit more of, you know, that defensive prowess they had a couple seasons ago. Maybe they won't be able to do that, and Mahomes will have to air it out. And if that happens, like, I'll eat some crow. But I've harped on this to no end already, but I'm generally looking for more proven guys at the quarterback position. I don't necessarily want to end up like where you have Mahomes ranked now is really similar to where we had Mariota going last year, right? He was a little too hyped up.
Yeah, buzzy.
Right, a little buzzy, and I'm not there yet with Mahomes. I'm not ready to do that. I have him down at QB 17 for what it's worth, so that kind of will show you where I am relative to this number 11 ranking of yours. And I'm not going to – again, these guys are all so close in value that it's kind of comes down to personal preference and what, you know, narratives and reports you want to kind of put your weight behind. But Mahomes is not a guy I'm ending up with much because I feel like the helium has him floating a little higher than I'm willing to draft him.
Yeah. You know, it could be drafting best balls that has got me so high on him because, like you said, there's minimized risk if you have a second, third quarterback and it's an automatic roster decision. You know, in the early part of the season, if he's your only quarterback in a season long league, it's going to be a different decision.
That's actually a great point. And I should clarify that I do think Mahomes is going to have some huge weeks based mostly on the weapons that are around him. Like, how can you not, when you're throwing to two, you know, really good deep ball threats in Hill and Watkins, as well as Travis Kelce? Like, he has rushing ability as well. Like, I think Mahomes is going to have those big spiked weeks, and that's what you want in best ball. So I can totally get behind ranking him higher for that. I should note that when I'm referencing my rankings here, I'm generally looking at, you know, full, you know, play out the season redraft leagues. So when I say I have him at 17, that's a lot because I don't necessarily expect him to be usable every week. In best ball, that doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So maybe I need to recalibrate because this is a best ball show that we're having here.
Yeah, we were mixing it all in. All right, so another guy I just want to hit before we leave this tier, Ben Roethlisberger. You know, last year he was kind of left for dead. You could get him dirt cheap. And, you know, the year didn't start out great for him, but, you know, he did what he usually does, had some huge games at home. He's another guy that makes a lot of sense as a best ball quarterback. What do you feel on him?
I'm in on Roethlisberger, and I'm ending up with him a lot. All those arguments I just made for Patrick Mahomes having great weapons, you can apply equally to Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, he gets to play with Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. That's pretty nice. You know, he's finally out from under Todd Haley, who, you know, apparently he had some static with. I think that this is...
Who hasn't had static with
Todd
Haley.
Yeah, exactly. And so if Ben Roethlisberger is a happier person, maybe that helps him play better. And he was already pretty good. I'm not a huge believer in the home road splits, although I acknowledge that they do exist. I'm definitely into drafting Roethlisberger. And again, because we're talking best ball, those home road splits are less of a concern. I think that he's a really nice value. He's always a little underrated just because drafters get bored of him. Like, he's been around, like, it's like Drew Brees. Like, yeah. We've been drafting these guys. They put up similar numbers most seasons. And what you really want to do is you want to find that Deshaun Watson. You want to find that outlier. And I think that that's hard to do. I think that that's much harder to do in practice than it is to do in theory. Like, so with that in mind, I'm definitely targeting the more proven guys, and Roethlisberger is one of them.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, I think Mahomes maybe can be Roethlisberger with maybe a little more rushing, but Roethlisberger already is Roethlisberger. So, I mean, I'm just kind of trying to get the most production I can here, most bang for my buck. So I'll stick with the old proven veteran.
All right, so then going on to tier four. I'll give you the list. I want each of you guys to sell me on one of these quarterbacks. This is, you know, QB2 territory. So I have Jared Goff, Andrew Luck, Matt Ryan, Jameis Winston, Dak Prescott, Alex Smith, Phillip Rivers, Derek Carr.
So we should note right now that Winston is facing a suspension, right? That news just broke today. He's going to miss some games most likely. It sounds like he's not even going to try to appeal it. And from the reports that I read, he's looking at like additional, you know, criteria to meet before he can be reinstated, whether that's, you know, therapy or community service or something like that. So at a base level, I don't think you have to stay away from him completely, because he's still, like, again, talented on a game to game basis. If he only misses 3 or 4 games, that's, I mean, whatever, like Mark Ingram's going to miss some games. Julian Edelman's going to miss some games. We'll still draft them just at a discount. But Winston, I think, has to drop down a little bit. In terms of someone to sell you on, it's got to be Andrew Luck for me. Like, he spent all of last year not playing, in theory, to get healthy for this season. And he still has T.Y. Hilton. They brought in some other weapons there. Not a whole lot of proven commodities in terms of running backs and wide receivers, like Eric Ebron, Nyheim Hines, Jordan Wilkins. But they really improved their offensive line, which I think is huge for Luck, because he was basically running for his life for the first however many years of his career. We've seen him put up top 1 fantasy seasons despite all of those problems they had up front. He's a guy who, for me, has to be ranked higher. I'm way into Andrew Luck, especially now that, you know, we see him throwing in mini camp. We can kind of assume that he's going to be ready for week 1. I think it's wheels up. We can, you know, kind of confidently move him back up our rankings.
You don't think there's going to be any rust from not having thrown a football in a year?
I mean, he's got a couple months right now to kind of tune all that stuff up. And yeah, he might be a little rusty to start the year, but I think, you know, by week 2 or by week 3, like, no big deal. Like, he should be fine by then, I hope.
Yeah, you know, I guess in the back of my head, I do have a little bit of a concern too that he may not start the year, whether it be the shoulder doesn't feel right or he's not up to speed. You have any worry that they may, you know, take a week or two into the season to get him transitioned?
Not really, no. I mean, and if they do, I'm okay with that. Again, it's like if he misses 1 game or 2 games, like Aaron Rodgers missed games last year. Deshaun Watson wasn't the starter last year. Like, these guys can still be valuable, especially in best ball. I'm not concerned about it. I think that Luck's going to be fine.
All right, Phillip Rivers. Right, I mean, enough. We're talking about...
Ray, sell me on somebody.
We're talking about Brady. We're talking about Bruce. We're talking about Roethlisberger. Saying, all right, don't forget the vets. Rivers is your 20th-ranked quarterback. He threw for 4,500 yards last year. 28 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. I mean, to me, why not Phillip Rivers? Why, you know, I'd rather a Rivers than Luck if I have questions still about whether he's going to be around for the full season, if he's going to have rust. Somebody like a Winston who's suspended for 3 games, a Prescott who only has Allen Hurns to throw to. So, I mean, to me, give me Rivers and Keenan Allen, and I'm going to feel pretty secure with that.
Yeah, Rivers is
I mean, Rivers is like the epitome of the boring quarterback, but he gets it done year after year.
Yeah, he's one of the best values on the board this year, I think. I'm totally with you on that. Hey, Mike, you have Jared Goff at the top of this tier. Sell me on him, because I'm not a believer.
Yeah, you know, I guess I have him here more from where I'm seeing him go. I think there are some legitimate questions about Goff. You know, the touchdowns aren't quite sustainable. A lot of his touchdowns were thrown to running backs. for me, I think that offense is in the right place. It's a question of, are they going to take the kid gloves off this year? You know, they did as the year went last season. And, you know, that Sean McVay approached it the way you absolutely have to, with somebody who had the confidence that Jared Goff must have had coming out of a Jeff Fisher regime. You know, you were the number one pick in the draft, and now all of a sudden you're not sure if you're even NFL level quarterback. As the year went, I think he got stronger. He started to show he could make downfield throws that, you know, we weren't sure he could make in his rookie season. You know, if that growth continues, I think he's going to be in the mix here.
I think my biggest concern with him is that last year's season, as good as it was for Goff, wasn't actually as good as people think. Like, most of his big games came against bad teams. Like, everyone remembers that crazy Thursday night shootout that they had against the Niners. In general, like, against the good teams that the Rams faced, Goff did not look very good. And this year they're going to be facing a first place schedule instead of the third place schedule they had last year. Goff didn't throw for more than 235 yards in 7 different games last year. Like, I think this is still Todd Gurley's team. I think that because the defense is so good, Goff doesn't have to throw very much. I mean, and their defense, in theory, got even better this offseason. So that's my main concern with him, is that the volume might not be there, even if he can, you know, kind of take another step up in terms of efficiency.
You know, it's interesting. I think there's going to be a little bit of a seesaw from Gurley back to the passing offense, because it just felt like every week people, you know, just said, let Todd Gurley beat us. I didn't, when you look at the year he had, you know, he just kept piling up touchdowns. And sure, he is a special talent and that's part of it. But, you know, sooner or later, a defense has to say, like, okay, we're going to key on Todd Gurley and make Jared Goff beat us. So, yeah. And then the other guy I would sell you on in this tier would be Matt Ryan. I think coming into year two, you know, obviously there were some struggles, with that offense getting on the same page, you know, transitioning from Kyle Shanahan to Steve Sarkisian. I feel like there's a lot more room to go up than down. And at this price, you know, with the weapons around him, good running backs, solid offensive line, Julio Jones, he showed a great rapport with Mohamed Sanu. Sanu scored a bunch of touchdowns, especially early in the year when Julio wasn't. And then they drafted Calvin Ridley, so anything they get out of him is a plus. All right, let's jump to tier 5. We've got Mitchell Trubisky, Case Keenum, Eli Manning, Tyrod Taylor, and Blake Bortles. You know, Trubisky's a buzzy name. Bortles has his supporters for sure. Do either of you guys have a feeling on Bortles one way or the other?
Probably not a direction I'd like to go in, maybe as a QB3 in a best ball, but that's probably about it. And I can see, and of the names in this tier, I mean, I like Taylor, Manning, and Trubisky better than them.
Mm-hmm. So,
Greg,
I'm okay with Bortles, and that generally kind of has to do with my philosophy on the quarterback position in general. Like, we talked a lot at the top of the show about how we like to wait and basically just take what the draft gives us. And we've talked about taking, you know, the boring veterans like Matt Ryan, like Phillip Rivers, like Drew Brees. And Blake Bortles is kind of just this tier's version of that player. Like, he's not great. We know he's not great, but he's secure in his starting role. That team is going to be relatively competitive. Like, their defense is going to generate some short fields for him to work on, which I think really boosts up his value from a touchdown perspective. And so you're going to get big weeks from him. It's kind of hard to know exactly when they're going to come, but in best ball, that doesn't matter. And even in seasonal leagues, like, you can kind of take the risk, because even if he doesn't give you, you know, 22 points, he'll probably still give you 14 in any given week. And in general, I'm kind of quarterback agnostic when it comes to drafting these guys. So I'd much rather take Blake Bortles than Tyrod, because I'm pretty sure Tyrod Taylor is going to lose his job to Mayfield. I'd rather take Blake Bortles than Eli Manning, because I think Eli Manning is a broken down player. I would rather have Trubisky just based, like, I'm kind of buying into the buzz on him a little bit, kind of like Mariota, like that offense is taking a step up, I think. But, you know, I'm fine with Bortles. Like, I will probably own him in some 2QB leagues this year. I'll have him on some best ball rosters. He's fine. It's just, that's as simple as it is for me.
Yeah, I mean, despite not being a very good quarterback, he's put up numbers throughout his career.
Yep. My main concern with him is the receivers. Like, now that Allen Robinson's gone, like, he didn't have great receivers last year either, but bringing in Dante Moncrief, signing Marquise Lee to an extension, like, and they have all these other tertiary guys like D.D. Westbrook, and I can't remember the name of the guy they just drafted, but then
Keelan Cole drafted.
Keelan Cole's there too.
There's so many Jaguar receivers getting buzz.
Exactly. And so it's like, I don't really know how to buy into that. Now at the very least, maybe you could look at that. You could compare that to my wide receiver approach that I talked about earlier. Like, maybe the Jaguars are just kind of taking a shotgun spread approach at the position. They're just going to throw whoever's out there who has the quote unquote hot hand. Like, they're doing the running back by committee, except it's wide receiver by committee. And maybe that works. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. I have a feeling with quarterbacks, it comes down to rapport with quarterbacks a little bit more than that. So it'll be interesting for me to see which guys Blake Bortles kind of locks into, aside from Marquise Lee, who's like the only guy he's really proven to have any chemistry with there.
Right. And then with Trubisky and Manning, you know, it's kind of a tides raise all boats situation with two new coaches, new coordinators, and, you know, what's perceived to be better offenses. Especially Eli, I think, you know, he's still really cheap in drafts, but, you know, the argument right now for Eli is Pat Shurmur has done far more with less. You know, you look what he did with Case Keenum and weapons around him. He's coming into a similar situation with the Giants. You know, they solidified the offensive line a little bit. They obviously have weapons at receiver, tight end. They drafted Saquon Barkley. So, you know, people are his supporters are pointing to that, saying, you know,
yeah,
if everything around him is good, Eli has been a good quarterback in the past.
It's worth a shot for me in this range. He has all the weapons. He has Beckham, Shepard, Barkley. So it's worth the shot for me. And to me, I could be wrong here, but I'm not sure personally I have much of a difference between Trubisky and Mahomes. So based on the two, I'm going to probably end up with Trubisky every time based on the price.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm totally with that. I mean, you can kind of apply everything I said about Blake Bortles to Eli Manning. Like, I think that he's fine. Like, Manning is a player who will have some good weeks, but he'll also have some bad weeks. The one situation in best ball where I'm more likely to draft him is if I already have Odell Beckham or Evan Ingram on my roster. I've been playing around a little bit more with stacks in my best ball formats. And so if I have those Giants receivers, I'm a lot more inclined to take Eli as, you know, my QB3 or maybe even my QB2 if I feel confident in whoever my first quarterback is.
Yeah, that's a great point there, Greg. I'm always a fan of tying together on the back end like that when it doesn't cost much.
Yep.
All right, so then let's just wrap up here. Give me the rookie you think is going to have the best season out of the five or so that got drafted early. Go ahead, Greg.
I'll take Baker Mayfield. The track record of quarterbacks who get taken first overall is pretty good. I had the stat on a previous podcast, but it's something like they start an average of 13 point something games in year one. Mm-hmm. I don't think Tyrod Taylor is going to hold on to that job for long. And I think the Cleveland offense is actually better suited for Mayfield to be under center than Tyrod Taylor. I think that Taylor, if he can hold that job, it'll be because, you know, they're winning with like the run game. And I don't know. I don't buy that. Like, I think that they're not really tuned up to do that. I mean, they have Nick Chubb, they have Carlos Hyde, but for me, Mayfield's the guy. I just think that he's the clearest choice to get on the field. And he also is, you know, the most talented quarterback of that group, I think, or maybe not the most talented, but the most NFL ready of that group. Right. Like Lamar Jackson, from a fantasy perspective, has tons of upside with his rushing ability. But he's also a behind, like a much more entrenched starter. You know, Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl, right? So we saw how benching Eli Manning worked out for the Giants last season. I think the Ravens are going to be slow to get Jackson in there. With that in mind, yeah, Mayfield's the guy for me. I have a feeling he's going to start the most, and he's the most NFL ready. That's as simple as it is.
All right, who are you taking, Ray?
I'm going to resist the urge to put the jet blinders on and say Darnold. So I'm going to go with Josh Rosen. I don't think Bradford makes it through a full season, regardless of what they're saying. I think all it takes is one injury or that team struggles like we expect them to, and Rosen steps in, and yes, David Johnson, arguably top two or three best running backs in football. He has Larry Fitz. I think Rosen's going to end up playing more than half the season. And I think part of this may be me being crazy and actually think that Cleveland's going to do good and have a sustainable offense. And like Greg said, like maybe rely on the running game and Taylor holds on to the job longer than we think.
Right. Yeah, Rosen would be the guy for me too. He's got the easiest path to playing time. Sam Bradford's knees are made of styrofoam at this point. And Mike McCoy's offense is going to be very friendly to a rookie quarterback, kind of West Coast system, high percentage throws, David Johnson catching the ball there. So that should go pretty smoothly.
Do you guys have concerns about the Arizona offensive line? Like, I think that's a lot of the reason why people expect Bradford to get hurt in the first place.
Yep.
Yeah. And if that is such a problem, then isn't that also going to be a problem for a rookie in Josh Rosen?
But if hypothetically...
Yeah, you know, I do, but... They threw some names at it, the problem at least. So we'll see if any of these retreads end up working out. And, I've heard that argument more for David Johnson, look at the line he's running behind, but the line's no worse than what he had in 2016. So,
and if they have to concentrate on Johnson, I mean, again, I'm assuming that they would still have to stop Johnson, which could be a knock against Johnson. But then it could open up things for Rosen downfield, and also if they're trailing in the games too, if they go to shotgun more and just kind of let it loose.
All right, let's move on to our toss-up for round three. Kenyon Drake had a breakout season last year. He did have to fight a couple different names, Damian Williams, after J.J. got traded. He's going pretty high, third round. It's for a guy without much track record, it's a pretty high price. Ray, do you feel one way or the other on
Drake? I like Drake. I just don't know that I'm fully on board with taking him in the third round. I mean, reality, he had two really good games. He had the two games where he went over 100 yards. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I mean, he had, here and there, he had some spots. He had, I think overall 644 rushing yards, 239 receiving yards. Yeah, he beat out a few guys, didn't have regular playing time all season. I mean, to me, it's just not enough there. I'm not necessarily concerned about Carlos Hyde. I think Ballage is probably the name to worry about a little more, and just that offense in general is kind of just not that good. So, I mean, I know right now Drake is the guy, but third round pick, I want a little more security if I can get it.
How about you, Greg?
Yeah, I'm out on Drake. If he's tossed up in the third round, I'm going to let him hit the ground. Generally, in that third round, if I'm not getting like someone like Ingram to fall to me at a discount, or maybe say like someone's the draft is low on Joe Mixon, like that hasn't really been happening. But yeah, I'm out on Drake. I have too many concerns about that offense in general. Ray mentioned having to deal with Frank Gore and Kalen Ballage, also in that backfield. Drake has kind of a lot of the makings of a one-year wonder from what we saw. And when I'm looking for a running back, I generally want a running back on a good offense. And I have very little faith in the Dolphins to be a good offense this season.
Yeah.
So I'd rather wait a little bit longer in ADP and go after like Deion Lewis or Jay Ajayi, or some of the rookies, maybe like even Rashad Penny or Darius Geis. Like those guys are all going behind Kenyon Drake and MFL 10s right now. Yep. And I think they're just better values.
Yeah. I love me some D Lou this year, fifth round value.
Yeah. I mean, how is his situation any worse than Drake's? And right, we've seen Deion Lewis produce at a high level, multiple times now. Like Drake did it for a few games. Like Ray said, it's like, I just don't see the track record there to prove to me that he belongs ahead of Deion Lewis on a draft board, and Lewis is going later, so I'll just wait.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd love to play devil's advocate and give you the case for him, but I got to give him a third strike against. And the big thing for me is if you take a look at his game log, his longs, I'll just run down them real quick, starting in week 8 when he really started getting some carries. So a long of 12, 42, 66, 6, 13, 42, 31, 31, 18, 32. That's insane. That's probably the best in the league as far as consistent long runs. Does he have a talent for that? Possibly. Is it maybe a production of a bad team being behind in games? More likely. I don't think you can count on him to break off chunk runs like that at that kind of level. And I think that's really inflating his year's numbers. That happened with Isaiah Crowell coming into last season. You know, he looked like a great running back in a great situation because of, if you took a top down view, everything seemed good, but that was his, you know, his 2015 was, or 2016 was just all these chunk runs that kind of came out of nowhere, and he didn't repeat that. So that's risky.
Yeah, if you want to put a stat to those breakaway runs, I just pulled up his player profiler page. 6.8% breakaway run rate. That was fifth best in the NFL among running backs. So, I mean, in terms of 2017, yeah, he showed that ability. It's a great question, though. Is that sticky? Is that a sustainable type of skill? I don't know if it is, especially when you're on a bad team like the Dolphins. Like, we talked about how teams might start to key in on, those high-end running backs like on David Johnson with the Cardinals. Like, are we going to see the same thing if Kenyon Drake continues to bust these big plays? Like, maybe, because it's not like Ryan Tannehill puts the fear of God in you, right?
Right. All right, so then let's wrap up, guys, with a sleeper from each of us. You want to kick us off, Greg?
Yeah, so I wrote down a few different names here. I want to throw two out, and the first is going to be specific to two quarterback formats because that's, you know, what we're all about at 2QBs.com. And this is going super deep. Like, sleeper is kind of a loaded term, right? It's generally you're looking for guys that are undervalued or guys that could pop under the right circumstances. And typically in the NFL, most of that stuff has to do with injury, right? And not necessarily like talent or opportunity or just raw ability. And if you're looking for like if you're in a really deep, like say you're in like a 16 team super flex league or something, I'm kind of intrigued by Chad Kelly, the backup quarterback in Denver. And, I mean, yeah, technically he's probably behind Paxton Lynch on the depth chart in addition to Case Keenum. But this is more like a general indictment of Case Keenum as a QB. Like, he's only done it once. He did it on the Vikings, which was a much better situation than he has now. Like, the weapons there in Denver are fine, but Demaryius Thomas is in decline. Emmanuel Sanders has had some trouble staying healthy. I just don't think that that's as good of a team in Denver that Keenum had in Minnesota. And I think that the fact that the Broncos didn't spend a draft pick on a QB this season really speaks volumes to how they felt about Keenum plus Kelly plus Lynch. And we already know that Lynch is garbage. So really what it showed is they had confidence that either Keenum or Kelly would be able to get them through 2018. And because Kelly was so, or excuse me, because Keenum was so bad for like the first however many seasons of his career, like, I think that that makes Kelly a very intriguing, like, handcuff in terms of quarterbacks for a 2QB league. I mean, he's not draftable anywhere else, but again, I'm kind of promoting the format that I'm all about here. I'll come back with a sleeper for everybody else, but I'll let you guys go first.
All right. Yeah. And you know, if you guys aren't trying out a 2QB league or a super flex league, it's a lot of fun and it's not as hard as you think it is. You know, I know people stress over the quarterback position and just having to find a second one when it's hard to find a first one. It's an enjoyable format. Give it a shot.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I mean, the quarterback position now is so deep too, that it's a lot easier now than it was 5 years ago to make sure you end up with startable guys at the quarterback position. Like, don't have any fear of the format.
I don't want to say easier, but I guess more enjoyable is the way to phrase it. Like, I'd rather find two quarterbacks and see what I can make out of it than try to have a tough decision over one quarterback when there's all these guys out there on the wire.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a ton of fun.
All right, Ray, hit us with your sleeper.
I'm going deep. I'm going to Christian Kirk. He's rookie wide receiver in Arizona with an ADP of 197. He's essentially free. So the way I look at it is let's talk about him being number two receiver. College, he played more in the slot, and he was pretty good at it. He was second round pick this year by the Cardinals. So far, OTAs, minicamp, looks like he's lining up outside, and he's going to potentially be starting at opposite Larry Fitz. Obviously, Larry Fitz can't catch everything. Defenses are going to key on him. I think that opens some things up for Kirk. Not much competition there for him to beat. To beat out, if they're not going to be very good, they're going to be trailing, they're going to be passing. It's just, you know, really, really a deep, deep flyer. Not necessarily a fan of rookie wide receivers in general, but at this price, I feel like 20th round, throw a dart, see what happens.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it up here real quick. Jody Smith wrote a piece for Fantasy Pros this week about vacated targets, and the Cardinals have a pretty large amount of it. Yeah,
it's a lot.
It's up there, like, I forget, maybe 30% or 40%. So there's definitely shares in the offense to be won, and they say with McCoy, I think he's going to spread the ball out a little more. I don't think you're going to see Larry Fitzgerald top 150 targets like he has been under Arians. So that's two things working in favor of some other names in there.
If you want to piggyback off of that from a best ball perspective, you could also look at Chad Williams, the other receiver, the guy that drafted last year in Arizona. Like, if you're doing enough best balls to where you're ending up with Christian Kirk in two leagues, maybe for every two shares of him, you might want to throw one dart at Chad Williams instead.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Just because, like, again, you're kind of spreading out your risk and hoping that one of those guys in Arizona hits is the wide receiver too.
Right. Yeah, because Kirk does profile a little bit more as a slot guy, and you know, Larry Fitz spends most of his time there these days. For me, you know, the name I had coming into the show was going to be Kalen Ballage, and then we decided to use Drake as our toss up, and I went back and forth, you know, if I should use him or not, but I'm going to throw him out there because, as we pointed out, you got Frank Gore's zombie in camp there. Who knows how long he's effective. He wasn't effective last year, really. You know, never bet against him because when the apocalypse comes, it's going to be like cockroaches and Frank Gore still running the ball. And then Drake, you know, we mentioned the issues with him. You know, he didn't really win the job last year. Drake, Damian Williams got hurt. They were in a pretty solid timeshare, and you know, that's when he took over and started having success. So I don't think the bar is very high. And for me with Ballage, it's he's a stud athlete, 6'2", speed, power, strength. He's got it all. If you look at his combine profile, it's almost a copy and paste of David Johnson. Like, good pass catcher, above average speed, lacks vision, you know, just it's like word for word. So, you know, maybe I'm looking for something that's not there, but I think he's going to have a role as a pass catcher, and he can grow that if he shows the kind of talent he did in college, the athleticism, the playmaking ability. And he's dirt cheap, so you can get him for nothing. Greg, you had one more guy for us.
Yeah, if you had asked me this question like 3 months ago, I would have been all about Tyrell Williams for the Chargers. And I think ever since Hunter Henry got hurt, people have kind of wisened up to drafting Williams. So I'm going to go a different direction here, and I'm going to kind of go in the same vein of your Ballage pick. I'm going to go with Matt Breida of the Niners. Okay. And this is more of like a kind of a pick based upon like trends in the Kyle Shanahan offense. Like, everyone's really psyched about Jerick McKinnon, but it's not very often that one running back is used exclusively in a Shanahan offense. And Breida is definitely a better, like, between the tackles runner than McKinnon is. I think that he's going to see plenty of, you know, goal line work and general usage as well. Like, even last season when they had Carlos Hyde, like, they were mixing in Breida pretty regularly. I think they like him as a player. That's why they let Carlos Hyde go, or part of why they let Carlos Hyde go. Just a kind of a solid, like, tertiary or like secondary piece to McKinnon in that offense. And if McKinnon gets hurt, then Breida's like really going to step into a lot of work. So he's another like kind of quasi backup running back who might end up being, you know, an actual like starter level running back in my mind.
Yeah, Shanahan has made no qualms about his desire to use two running backs at any stop. And right. I was even thinking just the other day, Joe Williams was kind of a forgotten man with everything that happened, but they were very high on him when they drafted him last year. Curious to see if he makes any noise in camp as well.
Yeah, it's similar to the Christian Kirk, Chad Williams thing with the Cardinals. Like in best balls, you can take Breda in some drafts. You can take Joe Williams in some drafts. You don't have to pay anything to get those guys. I mean, Breda is a little bit more expensive. Yeah. But yeah, I like the Joe Williams call too, because why not? It could work.
Right now, that pick is Breda for me. But as camp starts to happen, if you hear some coach speak about him, you might want to think about it. But all right, that's what we got time for. Thanks for joining me tonight, guys. Ray, Greg, anything you're working on over at 2QBs you want to highlight, Greg?
Yeah, so right now the big push for Sal, my partner at the site, and I is the 2QBs draft guide. This is like a giant ebook that we're going to start selling on the site that's dedicated to draft strategy of two quarterback formats. We have a bunch of awesome contributors to it, some big names from around the fantasy industry. You'll hear more about that if you follow the site. So check us out on Twitter at 2QBs. Spell that out, TWOQBS. You can follow me on Twitter at Greg Sauce. I'll be tweeting a bunch about the guide as it kind of approaches. But yeah, right now, Sal and I are in the like editing phase of that. So we have a bunch of content from all these awesome writers, and we're kind of putting it together into one, massive document that'll just teach you like everything you want to know about the two quarterback format. Some really intense, like stats driven stuff, some humor stuff, like some funny stuff. It's going to be great. Last year's was a big success, and we're hoping to make this year's an even bigger success. So keep an eye out for that. Otherwise, you can always find me over at 2QBs.com. That's where most of my work gets posted. And I've got a podcast called The 2QB Experience that's hosted on the site, and you can get it, everywhere else where you find, podcast, iTunes, probably where you're listening to this right now. You can probably listen to my podcast too. So come check it out. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Glad to have you on. Do you think you're going to be able to keep Sal to just one chapter dedicated to Alex Smith?
No, never.
You might just need the Alex Smith companion guide.
Yeah, it's a good point. There might just be like a sonnet or like an ode or like many different odes or sonnets by Sal in there. You'll have to get your copy to find out.
Looking forward to it. Ray, hit us with your Twitter and anything you're working on.
Ray_Kuhn_28. Getting started. I think this is going to be the first week of a weekly fantasy football article going up on Friends with Fantasy Benefits, and pretty soon we'll have our fantasy football coverage starting over at Roto Professor as well.
All right, awesome. Thanks for joining me, guys. Have a good night.
Adios.
Later.